Well, tonight I hope we will be able to see how God used John Williams, the missionary martyr of the South Sea Islands. This man was born in 1796 in what was then a quiet country village called Tottenham near London. His mother was a Christian, his father wasn't, and the boy followed the father. When he was 12, he was forced to leave school and start a 7-year apprenticeship as an ironmonger. And during that period, a rather modern situation developed. He mixed with a gang of rough characters who wasted their time hanging around the London streets, drinking too much. And then on the 3rd of January 1814, when he was 18, he was doing the usual thing, hanging around City Road, London, with nothing to do and a lot of time to do it in, when the wife of his master passed by. His friends were late, so she had the chance to speak to him. She was heading for Whitfield's Tabernacle and invited him to come. He tried to wriggle out of it. He hoped his friends would show up and give him the excuse he wanted, but there was no sign of them. Finally, he said he'd come just this once. By God's grace, his conversion was complete before he left the service. And before many months had passed, he had broken completely with the world and was known as an ardent Christian, became a Sunday school teacher and a visitor of the sick. And it was at Whitfield's Tabernacle that he first heard about the South Sea Islands. News was given, the King of Tahiti has become a Christian. Missionaries are needed. When he was 20, a lot of things happened in his life. He got married, he was ordained, he applied to the London Missionary Society, and late in 1816, he set sail for the South Seas. And about 20,000 miles later, he arrived in Tahiti 1 year to the day after he had sailed. Now, I think it's really worthwhile pausing here. Think about it. No hospitals, no aircraft, no telephone, no fax, no email, no serious contact with home apart from the irregular reports and equally irregular letters. This is sacrifice in a big way. With a big S. Now you may be wondering, what sort of beliefs was it that sent such a man to do such things? Well, the London Missionary Society had a strict rules. It only supported Reformed or Calvinistic non-Baptists. The Baptists, by the way, applied to the Baptist Missionary Society. Anyway, Williams learnt the local language in 10 months instead of the expected 3 years. He didn't use grammars and dictionaries. He seems to have learnt by some sort of conversational method. He made his base in the Society Islands, which had been discovered by Captain Cook. And here he showed he was a real DIY missionary. He built his own house. It had 7 rooms. And he built all the furniture in it. Then he built a simple 16-foot boat so he could get to a nearby island. And after 1 year, he built a chapel for the converts. And in 1820, 2,400 of the native people attended a service there. Williams organized these people into local churches. Every congregation was linked to the others, and occasionally they had big meetings, a bit like a synod. And in one of these meetings, in the chapel, he baptized 500 natives at one time. But as in all Christian work, success stirred up opposition. An elaborate plot to murder him was thwarted, and when his wife heard the details, she gave birth prematurely to their second child, who died within 24 hours. He was always keen to visit as many islands as possible. You can imagine what sort of use he would have made of a helicopter. By 1830, when he was 34, he decided to go to the 8 Samoan Islands. But there was no ship big enough to go the 1,800 miles. It took him 3 months to build a ship of 80 tons, which he named the Messenger of Peace. Now, plainly, that's an enormous achievement in itself, But it's really nothing compared with what he achieved in Samoa. Soon after dropping anchor, the local king was aboard the ship, and with curiosity he took down a brass blunderbuss which had been loaded with 8 bullets. And after examining it, the king pointed it at Williams, and he was about to pull the trigger when a friend realised what was happening and stopped what would have been an awful accident. As his biographer comments, "We are all immortal until our work is fully done." By 1832, 700 Samoans were assembling for worship on the Lord's Day. Now, a great deal of William's success was the result of using native evangelists and teachers. His first child, who later became a minister, judged that his father's success was linked to this principle of teaching others also. After being away 18 years, he decided to visit Britain. He and his wife did a lot of deputation work, and he wrote a book called Missionary Enterprises in the South Seas. As interesting as Robinson Crusoe, says somebody who read it. But after 4 years, he was determined to return. There was a bit of an emotional farewell at Whitfield's Tabernacle, and he said almost prophetically, "The perils that await me are very great, and I may not come back again." Back in the South Seas, he had new missionary recruits, printed scriptures, and he was now determined he would go to the New Hebrides. They were 600 miles away from the base in Samoa. So the next year he set off in his boat, his ship, for the New Hebrides. But unfortunately, traders had got to the island before him. It was called Erromanga. They were after sandalwood, which brought great profits, and to get it, they had treated the natives cruelly and wickedly. And when Williams and his friend Harris came ashore, they were attacked with clubs and spears, killed, and later eaten. He was 43 years old. News travelled so slowly that it was to be 4 months that Mary Williams knew she was a widow, and she was only on the Samoan Islands. Before that century was finished, Erromanga had so many converts to the Christian faith that John Peyton could call it the Christian Island. But before that, 3 Free Church missionaries were also murdered on it. All 3 had come from Prince Edward Island, Canada. Pastor and Mrs. Gordon were murdered after a ridiculous accusation of causing a measles epidemic, and then Pastor Gordon's brother came out to take his dead brother's place, only to be murdered as well. You may think that for an island with a population of only just over 2,000, 5 deaths was a high price to pay. But those sacrificial lives leave us with a challenge which doesn't need to be spelt out. It speaks for itself.